My name is Kathy Kubik. I am 30 years old. It's August 24th, 2005. We are in Chicago outside the Field Museum. And I am the daughter of the person I will be interviewing.
Hi, I'm Nancy Stalzer. I'm 61 years old. Today is August 24th, 2005. We're in front of the Field Museum in Chicago, Illinois, and I'm the mother of Kathy Kubik.
Okay, Mom, what is your first memory?
My first memory, I think, is when my sister Cheryl was born, and my mother was picked up at our dinner table and rushed out the door in my father's arms. And my grandparents said not to worry, she'd be back in a few days. And when she came back, she had my sister Cheryl.
What neighborhood in Chicago did you grow up in?
We lived southeast. We lived at 89th and Normal. And I went to Ryder grade school. And if we had lived there when I went to high school, it would have been Calumet High School.
So what is your ethnic background?
I'm French. I'm Irish, Danish, and a little bit Dutch.
What was it like growing up in Chicago in the 1940s?
It was a lot simpler back then. We didn't really have TV. I can remember when TV was invented, which is really, really sick to think of it. But we played outside. Our parents would say, go outside, and that's what we did. We played outside. We made up wonderful games. My neighbor had a field, and every day we would try to build a fort. And we just had a really nice time growing up. I loved my childhood.
Did you have a favorite game that you played?
Well, when we weren't building a fort, we played hopscotch. And when I got into grade school, we had different seasons for different games. There was the season of yo-yos. Everybody had to have a Duncan yo-yo. Then there was a season for pea shooters. There was a season for jump rope. Everybody jumped rope at the same time. It was kind of silly when you think of it now, but that's the way it was. You had a certain time for things.
So you couldn't play hopscotch in the winter time?
Well, no, because you have to go outside to play hopscotch.
Okay.
But hopscotch was my favorite game.
Okay. What was it like having a working mother at that time?
It was different. I think I was the only student in my class that had a mother that worked. And when the teacher would say, we need mothers to come in, I would always say, oh, I can't. My mother's working, because she couldn't come to the class and all that because she was at work. So it was a little hard because I wanted her to be there with all the other mothers.
Did that affect your family life and your free time? Did you have to take care of your siblings? Or?
Well, yes, because when I was 11, my mother had her last baby, a little boy, my brother Charles. And there was nobody there to take care of him but me. And we lived with my grandparents. And so after school, my mother would work nights. I would have the baby, and then I would have to cook dinner for the grandparents. And plus which, take care of my two sisters. So I couldn't really go out with my friends after school. And I couldn't join clubs and what have you at school because I had to be home.
Do you think this made you grow up quicker than the other kids?
Maybe, but back then we were a family and we all, everything was done for our family. We had a small family and I never felt like I was being picked on. It was just something that had to be done. Somebody had to step in there and do these things.
So it sounds like family is very important to you.
Very important.
And now that, well, you're a mother and you stayed home with us, so I wonder if that has something to do with your family values.
I always wanted to, I hoped I would be able to have children and stay home with them. So when they came home from school, I would be home. And they would never come home to like a dark house and a cold house. And so your father made a good living and we were able to do that.
When you were younger, did you get into any trouble? Like, what was the worst thing you did?
Well, I used to, no, I think I was pretty good. I really didn't get into trouble. I never told my mother no in my entire life. Is that the kind of trouble you mean?
You never got scolded for anything? You never gotten, you know, I had to stay after school?
Oh, no, never in school. I was very good in school. I guess the worst thing I did, I was mean to my sister Barb. We were closer in age, and I was really, she aggravated me. And we're best friends now, but at the time I used to pull her hair, you know, mean things. And, yeah, so I guess I'm sorry about that now, but we laugh about it, her and I.
How many siblings do you have?
I have my sister Barb. She's 3 years younger than me. And then my sister Cheryl is 4 years younger than me. And then Charlie is, I was 11 when he was born.
Were there any hard times?
Well, we never had much money, but we never really knew. We were the same as everybody else, I would think. Back then, there wasn't a lot of money. We lived in like a working neighborhood, and I felt we had as much as everybody else.
What did your father do?
My father worked for the phone company. He was a lineman and when he started, but then he got a job in the office. He was very smart, and he would do training.
And how did him and your mother meet?
They met in high school. They met at Parker High School.
Was he her first love?
I think so. Yes, I think he was. They were married, and then he went to war, and I was born. And then when he came home, I was 2 years old. So I was born when my mother was 19.
And how long did they were they together before they got divorced?
They were married. Let's see. If they got married in 1942, they divorced in 1956 or 7.
Did this affect your family dynamic?
For the better, I think, because when they were together towards the end, they were fighting all the time, and we were always real on edge, and my father had a terrible temper. So we were really happy when it was finally over and we could go live with my grandparents.
So you lived with your grandparents in their house?
Yes. We lived with them in their old house, and then we bought another house. He thought he wanted to move to a nicer neighborhood.
And did you like that house better than the house you grew up in?
No, I like the old neighborhood better. It had a beautiful park. The park had its own library, and I could just walk a half a block and get all these books and read them, and there were a lot of shops. And the neighborhood we moved to was more residential, and I had to take a bus to school. And in the old neighborhood, I could just walk.
So tell me about your grandparents. How did they meet?
My grandparents met in California. My grandmother was 16 and living on her own, and she had a room, and she worked for the Pantages Theater, and that was a theater that had all kinds of vaudeville acts. And my grandfather came from Denmark, and his sponsor was an uncle that owned a hotel in California. Because to come to this country, you needed a sponsor and a job waiting. And so his room must have been very close to my grandmother's, and they would pass each other on the street. And he asked my grandmother out, and she said definitely not, because he spoke with an accent, and he had blonde long curls, and this was not for her. And anyway, one day she was in her room and she heard some commotion outside, and she looked, and my grandfather had bought the sheet music to Alice Blue Gown. Her name was Alice, and he was singing this song to her. And that's how she started to go out with him. And then eventually they married and they had my mother. And then when my mother was a few months old, they took a road trip from California to Chicago, and my grandfather became a plasterer.
How did Grandma shape you as a person and as a mother?
Well, Grandma was very kind. She was quiet, and she loved her family. She would do anything for her family, and she was like a lady, I think. And when the grandkids came along, she really enjoyed them and always wanted to be close to them and do things with them. And I knew this, so that's why we always went on vacation with Grandma. We always took her along.
Can you tell me when you first fell in love?
Well, I fell in love twice. One time I fell in love and married, and that was a complete disaster. So then, thankfully, I fell in love a second time and with your father, and I knew the minute I met him that he was the one. He was just the most wonderful person. And he turned out to be a wonderful husband and a wonderful father.
So do you believe in love at first sight?
Well, for some people, maybe. I knew right away. I didn't know if I would marry your father because I had decided I was never going to marry. It was just so silly, a piece of paper and all this. And I was perfectly willing just to live with him, but he wouldn't have it, so we had to get married. But I think there is love at first sight, but I don't think that's necessary for love. I think you can fall in love after you're friends with someone for a while.
How did you and Dad meet?
We met on a blind date. My sister Barb and her husband wanted to fix me up with your father, and I said no. I did not want to go on a date, but my brother-in-law insisted, Ken Basil, and so off we went on a date, and I was so upset about it that we found a restaurant, and we went in, and I got sick. I was so sick. I pushed my way through a crowd of people, something I would never do in my entire life, sat down at a dirty table and had all the waitresses giving me an evil eye. And then your father came to see what was wrong, and then I threw up on him. Yes, it was a wonderful first date. And I thought, never going to see him again. I really don't care. I just want to go home. But he came around some, you know, it wasn't our last date.
So that didn't scare him away?
No.
Is that how you knew he was the one?
No. Although when I think back, yeah, I should have known he was the one. It was just... Yeah. I just knew he was like perfect for me.
How did he propose?
Well, it wasn't romantic. He had always said, he didn't propose at all. He would say, oh, when I get back from the war, we'll get married. Or he would say, when we're married, we'll do this. So it wasn't a proposal. And then when he did come home, he was home for 3 weeks, and he said, you know, my father said, if you're going to marry that girl, you better grab her now. So he says, so do you want to get married? And I said, well, I guess so. So that's how he proposed.
So he left for Vietnam shortly after you met?
When I met him, he was in basic training. So he left for Vietnam a year after we met, a little bit more than a year. Because when he came home from Vietnam, he was done with service, and you had to be in 2 years then.
Did you write letters while he was away?
Yeah, I wrote him every day, and he wrote me every day. And I still have his letters. Unfortunately, he doesn't have my letters.
They didn't come back with him?
No, he was so happy to go, he just left everything. His little tent, his blankets, everything. They're all over there still.
When he came back from the war, was he different in any way?
No, he wasn't different at all. He was exactly the same. Yeah. I was different a little. I was a little funny, and it took me a while to warm up to him again.
How long was he in the war?
A year. He was in Pleiku.
So when you saw him again, it was a little different or odd?
I felt... Yeah, he didn't feel any different. I felt not any different towards him, but I was just a little shy, I guess. I don't know if that's the word, but...
Where were you married?
We were married in Grandma's parlor.
What did you wear?
I wore a purple suit. I really didn't want to get married, but if I had to, I just wanted to go to City Hall and get it over with. But Dad's mom said, no, have it in my parlor. So to please her, that's what I did.
And how many kids do you have?
I have 4 daughters.
How did you feel when you first found out you'd be a mother?
I was really happy. I always wanted to be a mother. I wanted to be a mother when I was in kindergarten. I couldn't wait to be a mother. So, yeah, I was really happy.
How has being a mother changed you?
Well, I don't think it's changed me. I don't think it's changed me at all. Well, I mean, you worry about the kids. You're always thinking of them as something wrong or, you know, and so your life is always around revolving around the kids now. So I guess that's a change.
How did you choose my name?
Well, it was always important. I always wanted to know the name of the baby. And if the baby was a boy, it was going to be Michael after your dad. So that was no challenge. But thinking of girls' names, so your sister Chris, I always wanted Christine spelled with a K. And for you, we didn't know. We were thinking and thinking. And in March, we were playing our Irish records. And I'll Take You Home Again, Kathleen came on. And then we decided Kathleen.
And how about Kara?
Your father named her because we're thinking again. Now, remember, we never had to think of a guy's name. Mm-hmm. And he said, and he was looking in a baby book, and he saw Kara with a C. And by now, we had 2 K names. And he says, Kara with a K. And that's how she got her name.
And then Missy.
Well, when we were going to have Michelle, I had to have an emergency C-section. And that was a terrible thing to have a C. It was horrible. And I told your father, well, if you have a daughter, it's going to be Michelle or some K name. I don't really care, but I'm not going to do this again. So now she, you know, he got his Michael, Michelle.
How did Grandma feel about becoming a grandmother?
My mother? Mm-hmm. Oh, she really loved all her grandkids, and she would come over the day all the kids came home from the hospital, and she was always calling and stopping by. Yeah, she was really happy, and even Grandma Stalzer was really happy.
When did Grandma die, and from what?
My mother died in 1989. She died of ovarian cancer, and she had gotten sick in October, and they found out it was cancer, and she had had her first chemo, and she loved your father, and she really loved your father, and she insisted that he come with her to the hospital and sleep on the floor so he could protect her and what have you, because she had had all these bad nightmares when she had had it, and so he did, and I think maybe she would have gotten better, except then she had the stroke. And so cancer, this major operation for that, and then the stroke, she wasn't going to recover from so many things. So then she died in April.
Do you ever have any dreams about her?
No. When I think of her all the time. We have movies of her on vacation, and there are videos, and it's really hard sometimes to hear her voice. When I hear her voice, that's it. You can watch silent movies, and they're really nice, but when you hear somebody's voice, you know, you're in another room, and you hear her voice. But I think of her a lot, and I have good, really good feelings about her.
Do you have any traditions to honor her?
Well, we always go to the cemetery and visit her and my grandmother there together, and my grandfather, on as close to Mother's Day as we can go, and as close to Christmas. But now we've started to include everybody, so now we're talking 3 hours to go to all the cemeteries. Now we can't slight anybody, so we have to go to them all.
Is there any picture in your head of Grandma that you see all the time? Is there any way you remember her?
I remember her sitting in the backyard with all the grandkids by the pool, watching that everybody was okay and smiling, and that's how I remember Grandma.
Did she believe in an afterlife?
She wasn't religious, but she believed in fate, and she would always say, when it's your time, you'll go. I think she probably did.
How do you think she would want to be remembered?
Well, I think she would just want to be remembered and have people think kindly of her and just think of her and talk about her every now and then.
Do you recall your last interaction with her before the stroke?
Yes, we had taken her to a new doctor, and he was very optimistic. This is before the stroke. And she was laughing. Barbara and her lived together, and she was laughing because the doctor had given her a brochure, and on it there was a table set with a silk tablecloth and a rose and a vase and all this, and it was to make caregivers make an attractive dinner for their loved one with cancer. And she was laughing, and she says, "Barb, this is why I'm not eating. Look at you, don't set the table like this." And we were all laughing about it. And then it was a few days later, your father went over there to give her a little Christmas tree plant that we had gotten. I think you got it from your high school. And she wasn't up yet. And Barb says, "Gee, she's been sleeping a long time." And your father ran in, and she was laying on the floor because she had had the stroke. And then they had to call the paramedics.
If you could talk to her right now, what would you say?
I would say, "Mama, you've missed so much. Ryan," she would have loved Ryan. And I would just want her to come over and we could talk and just talk.
You studied genealogy. How does it make you feel that we're memorializing Grandma or talking about her here?
It makes me feel really good because doing genealogy, I found all kinds of relatives that, I mean, I knew we weren't aliens, so we had to have relatives, but, and so I've met these wonderful people, and I think it's really important to keep a record because then they're lost forever. And with the genealogy, all these little bitty cousins and all this I found, and now they're in our family tree, and they're written down, and they're, if I know a little story about them, they're in there, and we'll always have that, and it won't be lost. And they won't be lost and forgotten and like they never were here.
How far back can you trace our family?
Well, let's see. Around 1585 for one side. The ones like the Danish one, that's not going so well because it's hard with the Danish records, the Irish records, and then the French records. But the ones that came here early enough and were like in Maine and Pennsylvania, they have terrific records. And then you can look at wills and everything. So I can trace them back a little bit better than the ones that came later.
Is there, what's the most interesting genealogy find that you've come across?
Well, I guess it would be the French side because I found that my great-grandfather came from France. He was a small boy, and then his mother died, and his father couldn't take care of all the children, so he split his family up and sent them to live on farms. And then that particular, them, the grand, great-grandfather joined the Civil War when he was like 15. He lied about his age. And him and his brother were in the Civil War. And then I've traced him to where he ended up in Wisconsin, and he married, and he had a family. And so I guess that's really interesting that my relatives were in the fighting in the Civil War, and another one was fighting in the Revolutionary War and all. Because it really brings history alive when you think somebody that was related to you was over there fighting. And
If you could do everything again, would you do anything differently?
Well, I probably wouldn't marry my first husband.
But I'm sure you learned something from that experience. Or learned who to stay away from, right?
Well, yeah, but when I married him, I loved him. But, yeah, so if I could, like, I never really think of that first one. Unless somebody brings it up, I have forgotten completely. But that I would change that. Maybe I would join more things at your kids' school. I joined for Missy because she was the last baby. And when you were growing up, I was always going to have a baby. And so maybe I would have done that more. Maybe I would have been more outspoken.
Well, you were always doing crafts for our school projects and that
sort
of thing.
Yeah, I did that, but I was more quiet.
Yeah, but you always made our house a place where people could come and, you know, be comfortable.
Yeah, we always had our house was the house for the parties and that because we were the first one to have a house. And so we had all the parties. And that way I could include both sides of the family, your father and your father's side and my side. And then we didn't have to hurt anybody's feelings.
What advice would you give me and my other sisters about raising our own kids when that time comes?
Well, probably you will continue to work. So I think just make a safe environment for your family, a cozy place, a place they like to be. Ask them about their school, try to get involved in their school, and I'm sure you'll do fine. I have no doubt about it.
Do you have any dreams for your children? Any hopes?
I hope that they can do whatever they want to do, and so far that's been what they have done. Yeah, so that's my hope, that they can continue to live their life and do what they want to do and what makes them happy.
Are you proud of us?
I'm very proud of all of you.
What is the most important lessons that you've learned in life?
To treat people kindly and nice and avoid people that aren't nice back, and not to let it ruin your life or worry about it, just, you know, because I don't really think you can change people. So just surround yourself with people that you like and love and have a nice, you know, time.
Is there anything that you've never told me but want to tell me now?
No, I really don't have any secrets. I think I've told you anything and everything. I wish I did, but I really don't have any secrets.
Is there anything about me you've wanted to know but have never asked or don't know?
No.
Okay. So there's nothing about yourself that you think no one knows?
I don't think there's anything about myself that people... I think people know exactly who I am. Is there something that you ever wanted to ask me ever?
Well, I always wanted to know about the first baby that was stillborn.
Okay, I had, when your father and I got married, it took a while to get pregnant. And then I did, and the pregnancy was wonderful, except towards the end I got really sick. And the doctor said, oh, I don't know what's wrong with you, but you'll be fine. And then the night that the one night it was our due date and I went to the doctor and I couldn't even walk. I had such a backache. And the doctor said, well, you're not, he says, I don't want to hear from you until you're screaming in pain. And he said, are you screaming in pain? And I said, no, but this was my first baby. And he said, well, then you're not going to have a baby. And so we went home, and the next day I said to your father, you know, something, I really feel horrible. So he took me to the hospital. The doctor said, well, tell her to go to the hospital, but she's not having that baby. And your father took me to the hospital, and an intern came in and couldn't find a heartbeat. And so then everybody was running around. Nobody could find a heartbeat. And then the doctor came in, and he said he couldn't find the heartbeat. And then from then on, he wouldn't let anybody come in to talk to me. No nurses. I was all alone. And then, except for your father. And then, he kept checking me, but just the doctor, nobody else. And then he came in, he goes, okay, it's, you know, time to have the baby. They didn't take the baby. They wanted the baby to be born naturally. And, so the baby was born. He was, 6.5 pounds and he was perfect, except that he was stillborn. And the placenta wasn't adequate enough to sustain him. And when Missy was born, the same thing that happened to the first baby happened to Missy, but I was in the hospital and I had better doctors, and they had monitors then for the first baby. There was no monitor. And with Missy, they said something's wrong. And that's when I had the C-section. So with the first baby, if they had known there was a problem, and if I had had a C-section, the baby would have been fine.
So when you were delivering, did you know that it was stillborn at that time?
Well, I knew if nobody could get a heartbeat. And then they never let me see the baby. And now they let the parents see the baby. So to this day, I have no idea what that baby looked like. But they showed the baby to your father. But I guess that's my regret. I wish I had seen what the baby looked like. And then, of course, you have all kinds of guilt because you think, well, I should have known something was wrong. I should have said, you know, something. But I didn't know. They said that was normal.
So do you think that was probably the saddest moment of your life?
Yeah, that was sad. And then when people called, friends and stuff, then you couldn't be sad on the phone. You had, they were giving their condolences, and then you had to say, oh, I know, we'll have another baby. You know, so I had to console all of them. And then Grandma Stalzer said some strange thing like, God is good. The baby was probably retarded and all kinds of stuff, so it's better, you know, you don't have that. And but, yeah, that was kind of hard because you had to make everybody else feel good.
What do you think was the happiest moment of your life?
I think I've had really lots of happy moments. When all my kids were born, when I see my husband going down a water slide with his kids when, you know, little, and now when I see everybody and everybody's having a good time and laughing, and I just sit back, yeah, that's a happy time.
How would you like to be remembered?
I hope as somebody that never did any harm to anybody. Or to the environment, or whatever.
Do you have any stories about, you know, growing up with Grandma, or about your stepdad that are interesting or funny?
Well, my mother, after my parents, when she and my father divorced, she remarried somebody who we liked him at first until we realized he was insane. And one night, he got mad at everybody. Not me. He liked me. But he took an egg and he wrote people's, and he said it was a rotten egg. Now, I don't know how he knew that, but he took an egg for all the people in the family, my mother, my sisters, my brother, and he wrote their name on it and buried it in the backyard. And God knows what terrible things were to happen to them. But So we laugh about that today. My mother didn't stay married to him for too much longer after the egg episode. He said it was like an old Italian custom to do that.
Do you believe in curses, or are you superstitious?
No, but I love to hear about curses and all that. I'm not superstitious. I think there's, and when I hear a ghost story, I hope there are. I stayed at a bed and breakfast once, and I said, "Did you give us the haunted room?" And she said, "No." And I was really, I think that I wouldn't mind a ghost. Not poltergeist, for goodness sakes, but.
But you wouldn't leave your shoes on the table or anything like that.
Oh. We did have a little thing that Grandma said, "Don't put your shoes on the table, it's bad luck." And although I don't believe in things like that, I certainly didn't want to test it.
Because all of your kids are very superstitious.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Just because
shoes
of my
shoes.
But what else? You can't name anything else.
Well, I'm sure I could if I thought about it. Walking under ladders, all that kind of
stuff. Oh, well, that's like when I was growing up, nobody would walk under a ladder. And if you step on a crack, you break your mother's back. But, you know. But, no, ours was just the shoes. To this day, and really, it's not real sanitary to have your shoes on your table. Maybe that's your bad luck. You get some.
Is there any other stories you want to tell?
No. We say, we have one little funny thing, and nobody else has ever heard of it, that when we get up to move from one, you know, if we're sitting in a chair and we get up to get a glass of water or something, we say flapjack, and that means nobody can sit in your chair. You've saved it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we just did it all the time. My grandparents did it. My parents did it. We all did it. But now, I haven't found one other person whose family ever did it. So, did they make it up? I don't know. But we all say flapjack.
Yeah. Tell me about Lemonade Park. What is that?
Well, we had a pool for all these years, and I finally got this raft that I loved, and I was finally going to go. All the kids had grown, you know, and stuff, and it was going to be my time to go into the pool in this big raft, and the pool broke. And your father said, "The pool has to come down, and I'm not putting another one up." And so I was sad for a while, and I thought, oh, when life gives you lemons. So he took it away. We put up a canopy. We have furniture out there, and we have a little patio of stones. And I just call it Lemonade Park because that's where our pool was.
Do you like to sit out there then?
Yes, I do. I like to entertain out there. I like to sit out there and read and... yeah, I like it out there.
Tell me about the cottage in Michigan.
Your father retired because they offered him a buyout, and I didn't think it was a good idea, but he couldn't really turn down a buyout. And so he took the money, and he put it on we've always wanted to have like a little place, a little summer getaway. And so he put the money on this cottage in Michigan. And we can be up there even in the winter. It's not just for the summer. And we've all really enjoyed it. And you've gone up with Jim and the dogs, and everybody has gone up there now. And we've given keys out, so it's just a place whoever wants to go can go. And it's really small, but it's really the most adorable place. And the lake's really nice, and we have a pontoon boat. And, so that's really, I love being up there.
I've heard people have caught pretty big fish out there.
Yes, they have. I make pictures out of, everybody goes to the cottage. When they go for the first time, they have to stand with their hands out in front of them, like they're holding something. And then I will find fish pictures on the internet or in a catalog. And then all these huge things, sharks and eels and you name it. And then I'll cut the people's hands in a way in the picture and insert it, so I'm really cutting and pasting by myself, not the computer. And then we have copies made. So we have all these pictures in the cottage of all these people with really big whales they've caught, everything.
That's nice. Is there anything we didn't talk about that you'd like to add?
No. Are you happy?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm happy. Thank you. Thanks for letting me interview you. And when we started out doing this, I wanted to talk about Grandma, but then as I was going through the questions, I realized I wanted to know a lot about you as well. Oh. And I think you're a very strong person, and I thought Grandma was a very strong woman as well.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for asking me.